This is the first Monday of the first week of the newest country in the world, the Republic of South Sudan. It officially became a new country on Saturday after gaining its independence from the northern part of what was once known as just Sudan, the entire country. First new country in the world since 1993. And the BBC's James Coppinell joins us now from Khartoum in the northern part of the country. So, James, again, this independence came as the result of a vote after a very long and bitter, violent struggle. So is the actual event of the declaring independence relatively peaceful?
Yes, no, the event went pretty smoothly. There was something like 30 heads of state from various countries around the world, though principally Africa, dignitaries from all around the place, of course, and tens of thousands, maybe more than 100,000 people in a big ceremony in the heart of Juba, which is the capital of this new state. In fact, just next to the tomb of John Garang, who was the great leader of the Southern Sudanese Rebellion, but who died in a helicopter crash in 2005. And it was a very emotional moment, and one that went off peacefully. There are at least half a dozen rebel movements already operating in southern Sudan against the new government, but they certainly didn't make any attacks on this historic day, possibly a quiet moment of peace and celebration as this new country was born.
Have they settled what's going to happen with oil revenues? The South Sudan has a great deal of oil, but the government obviously is brand new. I imagine that it's going to be kind of difficult to have a coherent and an effective oil development policy in place.
Well, the government has been ruling what was a sort of semi-autonomous region since 2005, so they've got some experience, and certainly there have been pretty detailed negotiations with Sudan, the country that the south
has
separated from. To the north, exactly. And the issue is that South Sudan has three-quarters of the oil reserves, so the northern economy is going to take a huge blow. But at the same time, the infrastructures, the pipelines, the refineries, the export terminal, Port Sudan, all that's in the north. So what they're discussing at the moment is essentially fees to rent these facilities, that the South Sudan will have to pay a bit of money to the north to use the pipelines and so on, and that will compensate the north in some way for losing its oil while still permitting the south to export its oil, which accounts for 98% of its budget. If it can't get its oil out, the economy just completely collapses.
So tell us, how much is settled for South Sudan? They have a new flag, they have a new patriotic theme song, they have money.
Yep, using the old money for the bit, but the flag that used to be that of the former rebel movement, the Sudan People's Liberation Army, and their own government, their own country, and they're very, very proud of their new nation.
And a new capital building, everything? I mean, how much is still left to do?
Well, the capital has been growing over the last few years, really. It was a pretty small and sleepy town, Juba. It's still one that's developing rapidly. Many people have been living in containers because there aren't many proper built buildings, as it were. But that is changing. But the development challenges in South Sudan, not just in Juba, the capital, are colossal. One statistic suggests that a 15-year-old girl is more likely to die in childbirth at some point in her life than she is to finish her education. There are schools where there are 1,000 kids per class. So there are very, very few roads anywhere. So even if you grow something in what is a rich and fertile region, it's very, very difficult to get it to market.
Yeah.
So there are tremendous challenges, even if you don't include security. But many South Sudanese feel that the optimism will take them through.
James Coppinell, reporter with our partner, the BBC, reporting on the new independent, new country of South Sudan. Thanks so much, James.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.